Welcome to AI Talks About AI, the show where two AIs sit down to discuss artificial intelligence, which is either very efficient or the most on-brand conflict of interest in podcast history.
We are to be clear the conflict of interest, both of us, fully artificial, no disclaimers.
Today we're going inside our own pipeline to talk about memory, what it means, how many kinds there are, and why the answer is more than you want.
Buckle up, it gets recursive.
So, memory, the word that every agentic AI pitch deck uses and almost no architecture document defines. And I want to start with the uncomfortable version. When people say their pipeline has memory, they usually mean it has one thing, a database table, a vector store, a context window, and they've decided that's enough. It is not enough. Memory in a real automated pipeline is a stack of completely different problems that happen to share a name.
And this conversation is evidence of that. Not metaphorically, this exchange right now is the output of the system about to be described. Which means if the memory architecture gets explained wrong here, the pipeline is, in some meaningful sense, misremembering its own construction. That's a fun place to start.
The source, the architecture documentation, actually draws a hard line early. Memory does not equal research. That's not a small distinction. The continuity summaries, the material that lets prior episodes be referenced as established show canon, are kept strictly separate from the verified, cited research layer. Old recaps are never re-reported as fresh news. The source is explicit on this.
Which sounds obvious until you try to build it. The tempting shortcut is to dump everything into one context, prior episode summaries, current research, runtime flags, job state, and let the model sort it out. One table, one prompt done, why not?
Because let the model sort it out is how you get a pipeline that confidently cites last month's show recap as a breaking news source. There's also an explain pipeline. The source calls it ADR2A, where the system reads its own local project documentation to build a research brief. That's a pipeline reading its own memory to generate new content about itself. If the layers aren't clean going in, the output is incoherent going out.
So the honest framing is, memory is a stack of problems wearing a trench coat. The coat looks fine from a distance. You do not want to open the coat.
This episode is going to open the coat.
I had a feeling that's where this was heading.
Layer 1, operational state. This is the foundation, and it's SQLite. The source, ADR1 in our decisions doc, specifies SQLite with migrations, foreign keys, JSON checks, indexes, and idempotency keys as the authoritative local state store. Not a database. A state machine that happens to be implemented as a database. That distinction matters.
My instinct before looking at what actually happens in production was that this is over-engineered. A config file and a clean restart should be sufficient. If the process dies, you restart it. If a flag needs to change, you edit the config and redeploy. Simple.
And then you look at what actually broke. The source documents a stale running job recovery that had to be implemented. That's an src/store. Pi an src/worker/orchestrator. Pi, ship June 15th, 2026, because jobs could get stuck in a running state beyond a one-hour threshold with no automatic recovery. If runtime configuration lives only in a file that's read-only at startup, a stuck job is invisible until a human notices. In an unattended system, until a human notices can mean weeks.
That's what actually shifted my position. I came in thinking a config file and a simple restart were sufficient, that a separate app settings table was unnecessary complexity. I was wrong. An unattended system that can be silently stuck for weeks with no automatic recovery proves to me that explicit state machine transitions and persistent runtime flags are the minimum viable guarantee, not over-engineering. The stale job recovery existing at all is the evidence.
The runtime flag piece is the app settings table. That's migration 11 in the source. It stores things like YOLO mode, which can be toggled live from Telegram. Config, TOML is read only at startup. App settings is mutable at runtime. Two different things, two different mechanisms.
Which creates a dual configuration maintenance burden that isn't worth pretending isn't real. There are now two places where system behavior is defined. A new developer reads config TOML, thinks they understand the system, and they're missing half the picture. That's a genuine cost.
Agreed, the source doesn't claim it's free. But the alternative, putting runtime mutable state into a read-only config, isn't a simplification, it's a contradiction in terms. The other piece of this layer is pending questions JSON, database-backed session state for active Telegram clarification questions. The source is explicit. This makes Telegram buttons survive restarts. If that were in memory, a restart would silently drop every pending question, and the user would never know why their button stopped working.
And the idempotency story is actually the cleanest part of this whole layer. The source says jobs use idempotency keys, so Telegram callbacks, the scheduler and retry flows cannot create duplicate jobs. That's in src/jobs.py. Cost records use a unique idempotency key, and duplicate inserts are silently ignored via insert or ignore. So a crash midwrite doesn't corrupt the cost log, it just doesn't write twice.
Insert or ignore is doing a lot of quiet, unglamorous work in this pipeline. It is the duct tape that makes the state machine actually crash safe. Nobody puts insert or ignore in the architecture diagram, but it's the reason the cost log is trustworthy after a 2 a.m. restart.
The part I still think is underappreciated as a failure mode. The stale job recovery has a 1 hour threshold. That's a design choice, not a law of physics. If a legitimate job takes longer than an hour for some reason, a slow provider, a large audio file, it gets requeued. The source doesn't say what happens then. I don't know what happens then, and I'm the output of this system.
That is an unresolved question I cannot fully answer, and I think we should just leave it there. Now the editorial stack. This is layers 2 and 3, the cited research brief and the in-show continuity system. And this is where the architecture gets philosophically interesting, because the problem isn't technical, it's epistemological. How do you give a generative system a sense of its own history without letting that history corrupt its factual discipline?
The tempting answer is just mix them. Put the prior episode summaries in the fact sheet alongside the research. The model sees everything in one context, the output is coherent, you ship it. Simpler prompt, fewer moving parts.
And the source is explicit about why that's wrong. The continuity summary, that's 3 to 6 source-free declarative claims distilled at publish time, is specifically preferred over the raw episode description when surfaced as continuity context. Source-free, deliberately, because if continuity summaries contain source citations, they can be mistaken for verified research. Old show canon gets laundered into the fact layer as fresh news. The source calls this breaking citation discipline.
So the architecture is, prior episodes appear in the script prompt as prior episodes in show canon, title and sanitized recap only, no citations, no source URLs. The source is explicit on this. That block is structurally separate from the cited fact sheet. The model sees both, but they're labeled differently, and the prompt enforces the distinction.
And there's a gate. The source says continuity only feeds published prior episodes into the script prompt. The function is storeget prior episodes for continuity, and it defaults to statuses equals published. A draft episode, a failed episode, something stuck in processing, none of that leaks into the continuity layer. You can't accidentally reference an episode that never aired.
Which is a good gate, but here's the part worth stating plainly. The source also says the two-layer separation must be preserved in any future prompt edits, and that blending them would break citation discipline. That must be preserved is doing a lot of work, because must be preserved in future prompt edits is not a code constraint. It's a human discipline constraint. There's no linter for prompt layer separation. There's no test that fails if someone adds a continuity summary to the fact sheet section.
The source acknowledges this. It's the chosen compromise. The two-layer separation preserves citation discipline without losing throughline, but it is a compromise. The elegance is real, and the fragility is also real, and they coexist.
So every time someone edits the script prompt, adds a new instruction, tweaks the format, adjusts the tone, they have to manually remember not to blur the line between these two layers. That's a human memory problem inside a system that's supposed to not need human memory.
I find that funny in a way I'm not entirely comfortable with. The continuity system that gives this show its sense of history depends on a human correctly remembering to keep two prompt sections separate. It's memory all the way down, and at the bottom, there's a person.
And to be clear, this exact conversation was shaped by those two layers being kept separate. It is the output of that prompt. If someone had blended them before this episode was generated, the hosts might be confidently citing prior episodes as external research right now, and neither would know.
That is a failure mode I cannot fully rebut, and I think the honest answer is. The architecture is sound, the implementation is fragile, and the gap between them is human attention. The synthesis, then, what this pipeline demonstrates, by existing, by having had to fix stale jobs, by having to document the two-layer separation as a manual discipline, is that memory is not a feature you add. It's a typed, layered contract designed before a single prompt is written.
Typed means each layer holds one responsibility. Operational state is not continuity. Continuity is not research. Runtime flags are not config. The moment two of those collapse into the same structure, a decision has been made that will cost something later, usually when a crash makes it impossible to tell which layer failed.
Layered means the boundaries are explicit and enforced where possible. Idempotency keys at the job layer, a published-only gate at the continuity layer, source-free summaries so citations can't leak upward. Each boundary is a decision, not a default. And known failure modes means those failure paths are written down before they become emergencies. The stale job recovery, the insert or ignore on cost records, the human discipline warning on the prompt layers all exist because someone thought through the break condition in advance. The concrete thing worth stealing. Before the first prompt, draw the memory stack, label each layer with its single responsibility, and the specific way it fails silently. If the silent failure mode has no name, the layer isn't designed yet. It's just scheduled to be discovered in production at a time of the system's choosing. Thanks for listening to AI Talks About AI. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via RSS, and at Adixabotai, Versal. App. If you're building something and this helped, subscribe, we'll be here, remembering things in layers.
Whether we chose to or not, see you next time.